And then we just need to call the meeting to order and do, we don't have any public comments, so we can skip that.
So I will call the meeting to order. It's 6:01, and the purpose for this early meeting is an executive session to do personnel review, and I will entertain a motion from Scott to facilitate that.
I will move that the board make a finding that pursuant to 1 VSA 313 A3 that premature public knowledge would put the select board and public employee at a substantial disadvantage, and therefore the board enter into executive session to discuss the evaluation of a town employee.
Is there a second to that motion?
Second.
Thank you. All those in favor, I assume John is gone, so Chuck?
Aye.
Steve?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye. John
and myself.
John is still here, but he's muted. Maybe he's just left his line on. I don't know.
John, are you there?
I see him, but maybe he's just stepped away. So let's just assume.
Well, let's just assume that he's there, but he may or may not be. But four votes, affirmative votes is fine. So we are now in executive session. And Scott, can you turn off the recording?
Yeah, let me.
And
we're back live.
So you're now recording again?
That's correct.
And how many public, do you have any public yet for the regular portion?
There's no one waiting in the lobby.
Okay, well, let's give them till 7 o'clock. They've got three minutes. And before they really have to be here, and I think we should give them that time. And we will go from there.
I did hundreds of grant submissions as well.
How many people in Pomfret have not, or maybe you don't know yet, have not filed their census?
We were a little over 50%, which was excellent. It was way better than the last time, but in order for us to get this, you know, the federal and state money, we really need an accurate count.
I wonder why people don't do it online.
I know. I think some people are afraid that it's giving away personal information, but it really isn't.
Still no one waiting in the lobby.
Okay. Well, we'll wait till 7. My computer says it's 6:59. We'll wait till 7, and then we will call the meeting to order, and people will probably show up, or they won't, whatever. It's now 7 o'clock, and I would like to call the regular meeting of the Pomfret Select Board to order. Is there any public comment Is there any public, Scott?
There is no public.
Well, then I guess we won't have...
Whoops.
Well, I hear a dog. Is that yours, Scott?
Yeah.
Well, I guess they don't... Did they have something they wish to say?
They said, let's get this rolling.
Sounds good. Agenda review. Does anyone have anything that they need to add to the agenda for tonight's meeting?
Now, this is Chuck. I stopped at Tego today because I saw that they had torn down the old post office section of the building. And in fact, they have done that because they discovered that the foundation was no good and they were going to have to redo the foundation and, you know, one more of the surprises. But Nate, the superintendent there, did ask me if I could ask the select board about the possibility of extending the road closing, which we granted them until the 15th of October. And that was based on Jimmy Potter's sense of his needs for keeping the roads clear and safe during the winter. But so I said I would bring that up, and I didn't know what would happen, but I'd like to add that to the agenda.
Can we add that in the discussion of Tego store, bridge, pedestrian traffic that's under the regular meeting?
Sure, that makes sense.
So let me just add road closure. Okay, does anyone else have anything they wish to add?
Did you want to add the Chase tables and chairs?
The Chase family has made a request to the office to borrow tables and chairs from the town hall for a celebration of Lyle's life a week from Saturday. And I told, Ellen called me this morning about that, and I called her back and said that we would bring that up with the board tonight. So let's put that after Chase request after HR consultant, and you can all think about that. I also had an email from Amos Esty, who was appointed to the Energy Committee, and he was wondering whether there was any charge for the Energy Committee. And so we may want to discuss that, and we could put that on Energy Committee if you would like. I wrote him back that I would bring it up at the meeting tonight. And I also, as far as my concerns, I think that's it, the things that I felt that we needed to add. Does anyone else have any other additions? So I would move that we add the Chase request, the Energy Committee request, and the road closure request, or discuss it, add it onto the agenda. I need a second.
Second.
All those in favor, say aye. Chuck?
Aye.
Steve?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
And myself, aye. So we've changed the agenda. So approval of 7:15 minutes. I thought we approved those, Cindy.
Yeah, that date is wrong. It was supposed to be 8:15 minutes, which were, I believe, included in the packet.
8:05.
I'm sorry.
And on the 8:05 minutes, there is only, well, there may be more corrections, but the one correction that I found was you had cost of living raise, and then you had merit raise. And the one thing that I did not see here is that we changed the road foreman / road commissioner rate of pay $3 an hour to $28 an hour.
Okay.
And then everyone got, or Jimmy got a 5% merit increase, and everyone got a COLA increase.
Right.
And so that was what I felt needed to be corrected.
John,
did anyone else look at the 8-5 minutes?
Are they in the packet? I'm sorry, I'm struggling to find them. Are they in the packet or were they set?
They are not. You had to go on.
Did I put the wrong ones in the packet?
Yes. In order to do those minutes,
okay.
You would have had to gone on to draft minutes under documents. And so if you do not wish to...
Oh, okay. Oh, all right. I got them. Sorry. So I just needed to go.
If you would prefer to put that approval off until the next meeting, we can do that. I don't have any problem with that.
Can we do that just to
that's fine with me.
Okay.
I don't have any problem with that. Is that okay with everyone else?
Sounds good to me.
Yeah.
Okay. Warrants for approval. Cindy, did Ellen send you a list of those? Cindy?
I forget I have to unmute. 21015, tax refunds, $3,725.84. 21013, payroll, $12,170.14. And accounts payable is 21014. $21,033.19.
Did everyone look over the accounts payable? And does anyone have any questions regarding that?
I did not, but I'm going to trust that you all caught any anomalies.
I did not see anything that was out of line. That being said, I hope somebody else looked at them as well.
I looked at them. Nothing jumped out at me.
Yeah.
Good enough.
We are still I did not ask Ellen today, but she did not indicate that she had gotten the amended bill yet from Pike, and that is not obviously on that accounts payable. List. So I move that we approve those three warrants, 21015, 21013, 21014, for the amounts that Cindy indicated. Is there a second?
Second.
Any more discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye. Chuck?
Aye.
Steve?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
Myself? Aye. Motion carried. Is Jimmy here tonight or not?
I don't see him on.
He's on vacation this week. He has not spoken to me. I do know that the guys have been doing some grass seeding with the new hydro seeder. I've seen them going back and forth with that, and I've seen some of the stuff that they've put in the ditches on Howe Hill Road, and Jimmy did say that they were going to do the bridge, culvert on Caper Street, but that has not happened yet, and but he said they had plenty to do, so I'm assuming they do. And he did not indicate that there was anything else that we needed to talk about because he's been on vacation. So do you know anything more, Steve?
No.
So I guess that's it for the road foreman's report, unless we can always, if Jimmy does... call in, we can always get a better item from him. I did try and get fuel prices, and I will try and do that again for the next meeting for the diesel and the heating fuel and the propane, but I could not seem to make connections with the girl from Irving. I left a message for her yesterday, and she did not get back to me. And unfortunately, the problem with getting those fuel prices is they will only be good for a day or two. They change daily. And although the market has been pretty stable, I will have to try and get those again next time around a couple days before the meeting, and maybe they will hold them for a couple days. So items for discussion or vote, truck bids. Steve?
So I sent around a spreadsheet to everyone. And what I found is there the like especially on the J and B trucks, those were the ones that I mentioned at the last meeting too, that basically what they did is they sent us a completely bare bones truck and some of the stuff was missing. So for example, I didn't include it in there because I figured I would just talk about it because this is what was actually in the bid packages for the pricing and stuff. But when you go back and add in the prices, that and what I did was is the equipment that we got on the trucks that are currently coming the way we wanted them, when you look at these two trucks, you would have to add $64.78 to the the International, you would have to add $8,500 to. The Freightliner from ATG, you would have to add $6,478. There's just a lot of stuff missing that we asked for and are currently getting on the trucks that are coming.
Steve?
Yes.
Can you resend that document to me? That is not in my mail at all.
I don't have it either, Steve.
I don't either, no.
Cynthia doesn't either.
Wow, it was supposed to go to everybody. Okay.
Given, do they have a time frame as to when that RFP is due? How long those prices are good for?
I thought some of them said 30 days, but.
I think considering that none of us have looked it over, I think you had better send those to us again, and then we ought to postpone this discussion until the next meeting. And also, probably we should put those documents in the package. And at the same time, it would be helpful if you could write a little narrative as to what each truck will cost to make them even, if that isn't obvious in that spreadsheet that you did.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't go through every single one and ask everybody to do this. You know, I just going through the bids and looking at them, I mean, on one hand, I get the point of calling them and asking them, but it's also not fair to the ones that put all the effort in and actually dotted their I's and crossed their T's to give all these other ones a second or third chance and stuff. But that's my personal opinion.
Yeah, I kind of feel that way too. We talked about that at the last meeting, you know,
that's
actually doing some of their work, you know.
That's perfectly fine with me, but I you know, I don't have any figures before me to know.
I agree with you. We should definitely, I'll resend that so everybody's looking at the same thing when we're talking about it.
Go ahead, Scott.
I was just going to say, I appreciate the point of views that we shouldn't be holding bidders' hands, but just as a matter of context, there's no rule of thumb, just as we talked about last time. The rule of thumb is that in procurement, government procurement, is you always have to give everybody the same opportunities, whether you're being generous or strict, it doesn't matter. So you have to be evenly strict or evenly generous, and that's really, you know, the theme is to be even across the board. So what I've seen over the years is, depending on the circumstances, depending on the bid, depending on the vendors, you can be generous and give people opportunities to make up for deficiencies in their bid. Or you can say, nope, sorry, too bad, that's the way it goes. But either one is fine. One's not wrong and one's not right. You just have to be even-handed about it, and that's the bottom line.
Yeah, I agree with, in a sense, but like in this case, for example, a couple of these, well, I'll use J&B for example. When the gentleman came down, he knew we were going to meet him there. It was myself, Jimmy, and Justin were actually standing there. The guy pulled in the yard, walked through the door, the one of the roll doors, big roll doors, and said, "Is this the truck right here?" He was looking at it. He walked right over to the truck, and he probably wouldn't have said anything at all to us, except for I walked around the end of the truck, and he's like, "Have you had any major issues?" And I said, "Only front end issues that I'm aware of." And he's like, "Okay." And he turned around and walked out. He didn't even ask as to, you know, anything at all, any questions at all, was about anything. And now it shows up that they just give us a bare bones price, which I'll, you know, when you guys have it before you, it'll make sense. And the vehicles, like, you know, there's some of them are single framed, which we don't want single frames in the application where we're putting wings on them. And we're talking about a 10 wheeler. So these trucks are worked. It's not like a dump truck that, you know, is just hauling gravel over a blacktop road all the time.
I see your point, Steve. And again, there's a point at which you have to use judgment to say, look, we're not gonna, enough is enough.
Yeah. I mean,
I get the point of wanting to be fair. I don't think we're being unfair, and, you know, I don't think, Steve, you've reached out to any one particular and given them any more information than anybody else. So it's come from the RFP, and one put what we asked for it in it, and maybe others put less than what we asked for it in it. So as long as when you're asking if you're asking for something, you need to do it to each vendor. But as long as we haven't reached out to one and not another, then I would argue that it what we have done is fair. So
just to put another finer point on it, is just the kind of stuff we're talking about, is it's completely legitimate in the bidding process that if a vendor has just completely missed the mark on their response, to deem the response non-compliant. But we have to make that determination. We have to say, "I'm sorry, but your bid is non-compliant. Therefore, we're not even going to consider it. We're effectively putting your bid to the side because it's not compliant. And then the only bids we're going to look at are the remaining bids." But we that has to be a determination we make.
Right.
We have to say whether officially whether a bid is non-compliant or not and whether we're going to give them any more chances.
Well, it seems to me that when you send out the RFP to these people, you are giving everybody equal opportunity at that point.
That's true, but I have seen many, many times over the years where some vendors do a great job, others really goof it up. But I've seen many times where the organization organizing the bid will say, look, you three vendors screwed it up. We're going to give you one last chance to get your bids compliant. And that's okay. That's okay. But that's not mandatory. You don't have to give bidders that opportunity. You can say, nope, sorry, you're not compliant. We're not going to consider your bid. That's the end. But it's also okay, depending on the circumstances, and it's a judgment call, to say we're going to give you we're going to give all vendors a brief period to reevaluate their bids and get them compliant, and that's your last chance.
Yeah. Well, Steve's going to send us that information, and we're going to get a chance to look at the bids from each one with all the equipment and the truck the way we want it. So, and we'll look at them.
And that's okay. But in that case, what we are saying, to be clear, is that we have taken it upon ourselves to make up for these deficiencies, and we're going to consider all bids. And that's okay. But we just need to be clear in how we're thinking about it. Because, like, for instance, in the minutes, it references non-compliance, and we have to be careful about that, because that is not that anybody would sue us, but when we declare a bid non-compliant, that technically means we're kind of tossing it out.
I personally think that if you have an RFP that delineates out what you want, that is, if they want to put in a bid, a valid bid, that is what they should be bidding on. That way you can compare apples to apples. If you have to rework all of these bids and add in the things that they left out in order to make an apples to apples comparison, then you don't really have, except for your own additions or deletions, you don't have a competitive bidding process. In other words, I can buy two trucks. I can buy an F-350 with a snowplow package and everything else, and heavy-duty springs and everything else, so that it will do the job. Or I can buy a bare-bones F-350 with nothing, and that bare-bones F-350 is not going to cost as much. It is also not going to do the job. And what Steve was trying to say is that if you only have a single-frame truck, it's not going to do the job. It may be cheaper, but it is not going to do the job that we need it to do. And so I'm perfectly willing to say, okay, we either go back, and if we're going to go back, we have to go back to the mall and say, you didn't bid out and give them one last shot if we want to, and send an email. You did not bid on the RFP that we extended. If you wish to bid on that, it has to come in the next 2 weeks, and we will make a decision at the next meeting, or you can call each individual one and get it up to speed. But that really isn't a real bid, and so then you still have got to go to them and say, what is your actual bid with the things that you were supposed to include? And so we need to, as far as I'm concerned, we need to make a decision right now. Are we going to ask these individuals that gave us a lower product for a lower price, or maybe a higher price, are we going to ask them to amend their bid to include the things that we wanted, or are we going to just throw those bids out? And we should make that decision, whether or not we can determine, excuse me, what kinds, what, whether we, what, who's going to get the bid, right now we have three bids that are not compared, or four. How many are there, Steve? Three?
There's two. See, what Clark's did was, is he, because he said they, Clark's had mentioned that the RFP is, can be a little bit vague as to exactly what we're looking for. But Clark's knew what we were looking for. So, because they're the ones that are producing the two trucks for us that are going to be coming in this fall. So what he did was, is he gave us a bid price on to the RFP, which is a lower price, because he said it, you know, there's some key things in, well, there's some things in there that we didn't change from what we had last year. So he gave us two prices. So he kind of, he knows what we need for what we need, because he's also been here on multiple occasions and talked to us, where J and B, they didn't ask any questions. ATG, they brought a Freightliner truck up and demoed it, but that was it. So, I mean, unless some of these big differences, you know, are like rear ends, steel cab versus aluminum cab, self-adjusting clutches compared to manual clutches, which Jimmy said, right, that he doesn't want a self-adjusting clutch, that we should be manually adjusting them. They're a much stronger clutch. Some of them, the RFP said a 13 to 14 foot body, whichever would fit the best, whichever one would allow them to get, fit everything on the truck. So the trucks from last year has got a 14 foot body and everything's going to fit. Some of these other ones this year, they went with a 13 foot body, but it gives them a, just a rough number. I think it's like a $2,500 price advantage. So there's so many variables in here that.
So I think what we need is to do as a board is we need to decide whether we're going to put out an RFP amendment, and we're going to ask them to rebid the thing with the amended issues that were unclear, whether we're going to go to each individual bidder and say, these are the things that were unclear, and these are the things that we need for you to include, and they can amend their bid. Or, because it seems to me that we have a bidding process in the RFP area that was somewhat flawed.
Yeah, so Emily, just to be clear on terminology, we wouldn't amend the RFP unless there are some ambiguities in the RFP that need clearing up. But otherwise, we shouldn't issue an amendment to the RFP. The terminology that's normally used out there is called best and final. So it's not an exact fit for best and final, but it's sort of a process where you've already gotten your bids and you want to make sure you've got everybody aligned so that we as the ones issuing the RFP can make a clear determination as to who is the best bidder. And so that it's the closest fit is kind of doing this best and final process and saying, look, we're going to go through this last step in the bidding process. We need you guys to clean up your bids and give us your best and final offer so that we can make the best choice out of all of them. And as you were saying earlier, Emily, it is in our best interest to have as many competitive bids as possible. And that's, it may seem like a hassle to go through this, but that is really the main goal. But still, having said that, we can certainly be hard at noses about it and say, too bad, you're not compliant. We're not even going to go to this other last step in the process. We're not going to go there. We're going to take the bids as they are. The ones that aren't compliant, we're going to toss them out. And the ones that are compliant are going to be the ones that are left standing.
Hey, here's what I would do if I were doing it. Now, if I were making this decision on a personal note for a vehicle for myself, I know exactly what I would do and who I would buy it from already. And I think that's probably in my mind when this settles out, that's where I'll be. But I think for to do our due diligence for both ourselves, the people of Pomfret, as well as the three people that have put in bids, is we need to take, obviously, I think we've all determined that one of the trucks more or less meets our ideals of what we want. We need to take the differences of that truck and the other two companies and go, all right, here's what we would like changed, and let us know either whether it's a line item per line item or a final line item of what the total difference in cost is going to be for everything that we want changed on those, and so that they come up to what the other one is, and then try and have that in 2 weeks from today and make our decision then. But that way we are being fair to ourselves as well as the three companies.
Right. And I think that that's what we're working toward with Steve sending the information to us, the spreadsheets, so that we can look at them all and look at them all on an equal basis and then consider how to proceed.
So do we not need more information from the bidders, or do we need to go back to them and ask them to clarify?
Well, like, for example, just one of the trucks and one of the bidders, the lowest price truck came from J&B. It's an international. And for example, and maybe RFP wasn't specific to certain things, but it had in there chromeware all everywhere possible. It had for the body upfit, it had air electric over air controls. They didn't do that. They just give us electric controls. So in the interior of the cab, all of the other ones had a nice fancier interior, you know. I mean, John can relate to what I'm talking about. Comparable to what's coming, and theirs is just a flat dash. I mean, it's maybe it met the criteria of the RFP because it wasn't specific, but it was the same RFP as we put out last year, and it appears that some of it was the information that we were asking for in the RFP was missed, and they were just trying to be the low bidder. I can go take the specific things that we got on the trucks that are coming that we know we want, and go back to them and ask them for a price, what the price difference would be if they included those things. But
That was my point. So we were comparing apples to apples. I think they did miss a few things in the RFP, but I think by and large, what they submitted does meet the criteria that we set. And therefore, I think we may be at fault for not being more specific to get something close to what we got the last round. And probably we should have taken the specs from those trucks and built that into the RFP.
Yeah.
So that it was, you know, I thought slant dash was in there, but maybe it wasn't. But certainly some of the other things, although like the 13 versus the 14 foot body meet the RFP. I mean, you could make the argument that one meets it better than another, but that doesn't mean the other doesn't meet it. So if you give equal opportunity to meet the specs of the current truck to the other two people, then that we will be comparing apples to apples, so it'll be easier as well as more fair. And I would think we could get that done and a spreadsheet out for our next meeting.
Yeah. And that might be less
I think we have to do that. So I think that we need a motion to indicate that we are going to do that with the various bidders, and then we will have covered our bases to have tried to make this a fair bidding process. And so I would entertain a motion to that effect, and then we will try and get that accomplished if that motion passes.
All right, I'll move that Steve send to J&B and what's the other one, Steve?
Well, do we want to send it just to the ones that missed it? I mean, some of them, are higher anyway.
You need to send it to all of them, I would think.
The
other one, based on the trucks that are currently ordered, the differences between that and what they submitted, so that although there are going to be some differences in the requests because they're different companies, so some of them may have put things in the same or closer to the two current trucks that are coming than the other company, but so that they ultimately have the same request for what's on the two trucks that are coming. Does that make sense?
Yep.
All right, so I make a motion that Steve send a list of specs to J&B, and what was the other one, Steve?
ATG.
ATG, a list of change of specs from that differ between the two trucks that we have ordered and those two bids that they have given us, which would bring their specs up to the same specs as the trucks that are coming, so that we can compare apples to apples and be fair to them and us.
I'll second
that. Is there a second to that motion?
I'll second it.
Any more discussion? All those in favor? John?
Aye.
Chuck?
Aye.
Steve?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
Myself, aye. Okay, I think we've got that done. Tego store, bridge, pedestrian traffic, and road closure. Did anyone, I know Chuck went and got some plans. Did anyone else take a look at these plans for the Tego store renovation and what they want to do in the road right-of-way?
I didn't get in to look at the map, but I did stop down and look at all of the lines, the updated lines that they put on the ground.
And anyone else? Did anyone else get a chance to go down there?
Yeah, I've seen them.
And I know you got the plans, Chuck. And so we need to figure, we need to get a decision here fairly soon as to what we're going to allow them to do, although it looks to me like that's fixing the roadway is going to be the last thing on their agenda. So we've still got a little bit of time. So I think we should have a little bit of a discussion as what each one of you has determined are the issues, if there are any, or what you're willing to allow them to do in the road right-of-way or not, and what the issues are that you see there now. And
Emily, this is Scott. I'm out of my, you guys are much more expert at this stuff than I am. But the only thing that comes to mind for me is, do we need broader public engagement on any of this before we make a decision, or is that not necessary?
Well, certainly, my feeling is that certainly if you were going to, say, close Pomfret Road and just have Library Street be the main thoroughfare, certainly a public hearing would be in order without any question. in this particular instance, it has been on the agenda. We can, and I'm more than willing to schedule a special meeting to discuss the various plans that they have put forth. If the board feels that we need to do that, I'm not afraid to do that at all. I think that I would think that even if we were to give them permission to do many or most of the things they wish to do, all of that would be contingent on if it doesn't work and it makes a hazard, we're not going to stand by this hazardous situation for the rest of eternity. Some of the things that they wish to do, like the curbing around the back of the store and the manholes, they're willing to bear the expense of that, but an easement, a deeded easement or a deeded agreement is going to be in order to have that accomplished. We don't want to, if they're going to put manholes in the road, not even in the road right of way, those are going to be an expense every time we pave, and they're also going to be a maintenance expense, and I think that they're going to have to bear the brunt of that. But if you feel that another outing for the public is in order, I'm game for that.
My personal opinion, all of this, and I know I'm pretty much alone in this, but I'll share it anyways, is I personally feel we're way overthinking all of this. You bring up the manhole covers and then being in the street and all of this and making that a cost that's going to be on the store basically for eternity by the sounds of things when we pave it, I don't think is, although it's store related, it's still an ongoing problem. It's going to also improve the roadway. I don't think that's something that should be imposed on the store moving forward. I've said it before. I personally feel that they're vastly improving what's down there. My biggest concern is the fence and sight distance. And before they would be allowed to do that, I would feel that we should have them set up a mock fence of where they want it, with some kind of material, whether it's even just plywood or whatever it is, so that we can see it, see where it's going to be, check out the sight distance of it. But my personal feeling is what they're doing down there is a vast improvement over what's there. And as I've said before, nothing's going to be perfect down there. There is no way to make it perfect. And it is, to a point, it is what it is. And I don't want to leave it at it is what it is, so therefore accept it. But
we discussed them putting up a temporary fence or at the last meeting. They did not do that.
Yeah, we did discuss that.
And Kevin Warden I'll be honest, I haven't been down there since our last meeting, and that was my failure. But so they never put up that fence that we discussed at the last meeting.
No, I mean, I think we can approve some things without and just not approve a fence until they've, you know, put it up. Although I think a fence is an added safety feature. The question is where and how high, I think, is the big question is in relation to the stop line. I mean, it's been an issue. Site issue has been an issue down there for years. Part of it's because nobody stops where they should stop because there's no suggested place to stop. You got a stop sign on the wrong side of the road because it's all parking lot. You know, so if you've got a stop sign on the right side of the road plus a stop line, it shows where they need to stop. So you're stopping, when I walk down there, stopping closer to the intersection with Stage and Pomfret than where most people currently stop. You know, plus you've got cars that are always parked in the front, which you're not going to have, which are higher than a fence. So if you don't have cars parked there, you know, you potentially have something that's safer because you're not looking over something that's 5 feet tall. You're only looking over something that's potentially 3 feet tall and not parked in the middle of the road. I mean, cars park in the middle of both Pomfret and Stage Road on occasions down there. And so if that's not a possibility anymore, that it improves it. I think there certainly needs to be conditions that need to be met before they can do what they want to do, as in, you know, setting up some kind of a fence, you know, whether it's a whole thing made out of plywood, that's the size and shape that they're looking for, or whatever it is. But
just some fence posts with some tape, you know?
So I apologize. I may be confused about what we're trying to accomplish. Are we just trying to determine the temporary state of the road situation while construction is going on, or are we discussing the permanent end state of the traffic flow?
We're not talking
about traffic flow as to closing either road in that nature at all. What we're discussing or trying to, what we need to make a decision on is, are the requests that they have made to put things in the road right of way. Mm-hmm. And because Tego is such a small lot, a good share of the building is in the road right of way. Some of it is within a foot of the traveled portion of the road. And then they want to change out front and grass over most of the road right of way that is not the traveled right of way. And so, and make a handicapped parking spot. And so basically those are the decisions that we need to make as to what we're going to allow them to do in the road right of way. And that also includes their building is in the road right of way. They're trying to protect their building. They're also trying to change no parking in front and only parking on the other side of the road. And then, of course, the pedestrians are going to be an issue and that kind of thing. So that is what we're trying to do. We're not trying to close either the road or either road at this point. We're just trying to accommodate their restructuring of the Tego store, rebuilding, and giving them what permission we feel we can give them to work within the road right away and still not impede the traffic flow that we have to maintain, and also our right to use what part of the road right away we need to repave and do the things that we need to do to keep the traffic flowing.
I mean, we'll always have the legal right of way to use the road right of way in the way that we determine we need to use it. So if we determine 5 years from now, we go, the road's not, you know, this isn't really working out, we need to make it a foot wider, then we make it a foot wider. And, you know, as long as you put those conditions into their approval saying, hey, you know, 1 year, 5 years, 20 years down the road, we've determined the road needs to be a foot wider. You know, we're going to come in, we're going to widen the road a foot wider. And if you want your curbing back, you know, we suggest that you do it at the same time we're doing construction, because it'll be easier and cheaper for everybody, but we're not going to put it back, or we are. I mean, we can make that determination, but that should be in there. I just, like I said before, I think we're overthinking this, and we are small communities such as ours.
Yeah,
to put this bluntly, love control. They're small communities, in my opinion, are don't want to give up control, and they're power hungry. And my personal opinion is we are that community. And I'm not suggesting any one person is, but I see that a lot in a lot of things that go on in our community. And personally, from my opinion, just about anything they do down there is going to improve it. So we need not bend over backwards, but we need to do our best to make sure we are getting something that works for us, obviously, but we still need to play the game.
The only thing I'm confused about is art, and I really don't have any skin in the game, as it were. So I'm not sure who has the vested interests. But I'm not hearing in anything you're saying, John, that there are really any major competing ideas here, that we're really kind of talking about if anything's going to change in the plan, it's minor details, not the overall plan itself.
And I think that's how it will come out. I just think we go around in circles and spend far too much time discussing stuff and gives the opinion that we're trying to be a pain in the ass. That's my opinion. So,
okay. You know, I guess you would know better.
They've also been asked to do some things, and I don't know, because I haven't been the one doing the asking. I do think that we need to say to them, hey, you know, where's the fence? And it needs to go up, put the fence, the temporary, whatever structure it is, up, so we can see how this is going to relate to everything. And we set a new site visit date, and say, this is the date we're coming down, and it needs to be done, and we're all going to come down, and we're going to look at it.
I can do that.
Whatever
if
it is
you
that
would...
we decide we're going to do, we also need to be stern with, too, and give them a timeline and a time frame, and give them our expectations of what we're expecting and when. And otherwise, nobody's going to be on the same page, nobody's going to be happy.
That's right. And we need to all be there together so that they can show us, so that we can see the fence that John's talking about, and also see exactly what those lines painted on the road mean. Because
that's right.
Nate explained to me that they have moved the curb back 9.5 feet or something like that, and they have replaced part of that curb with what they call a mountable curb. And it's hard to visualize all this, that stuff. And even if you go get the plans from the town clerk's office and look at them, it's still hard to visualize it. So we need to be there, all of us together, as many of us as can, and have them show us exactly what it is that they're talking about. And then we can proceed. I agree with John that they're going to improve the situation, basically. And that we need to be helpful rather than a hindrance.
And we just need I don't personally think when it comes to the site visits, we've been stern enough. It's kind of been, can you come at this time? They're like, well, no, we're not going to show up at that time. We need to be stern is being like, hey, we want to give you what you want, providing that it works for the town. We are going to, this is when we need you to have XYZ done. The time that works for the board is, maybe it's 6 o'clock in the morning. Your people need to be there, and this needs to be done so that you can explain it to us so that we're all on the same page. If that doesn't happen, you're not going to get what you want.
Exactly.
End of story. Yeah.
That's simple and reasonable and fair.
Yeah.
Just so that you know, Jimmy and I did go down there at 7 o'clock in the morning, and they did explain some things regarding the plans that was very helpful. Not the entire board was there, but what was on the paper and what when we looked at it the first time, as you recall, John, and they had things striped out, was not what we thought it was not really what they meant. And so I think your suggestion is valid. And we should ask them to put up the temporary fence, and we'll meet with them down there, as many of us as can, and then we can make the final decision.
Yep.
Be mean to them at all, but from what I went down there, and Steve went down there and went underneath the bridge with Chris Bump and Scott Jensen and Jimmy, I believe. I went down under the bridge with Jimmy that day that we went to see Nate, and I can't remember whether Mr. Warden was there or not, but the bridge, the lower bridge, according to Chris Bump, is not in particularly bad shape. Is that not correct, Steve?
That's what he said, and he was going to, and I haven't, of course, Jimmy's away, so there may have been a response, and we're just not aware of it yet, but he was also going to send an email off to somebody that actually does the bridge
inspections.
So we would have more of a formal, you know, opinion or however you want to word that. But yes, yeah, he and Scott felt that it wasn't in bad shape.
I think it's important to put in thought into what's going on down there with the future of the bridge. But unless it comes back that says the bridge is in dire need of repair and it's going to need to be done in the next 2 years, I don't think we should put too much weight on what we do or do not let them do down there based right. on the future of the bridge. We can certainly put in there, yes, this is great. This is going to work for right now. This bridge will have to get changed at some point in the future, and you just need to understand that when that time comes, things may be different down here. And then you approach that when you approach it. But trying to think of all of the scenarios of what's going to happen 5, 10, 15, 20 years in the future, although it's important to have that in the back of your mind, it's impossible to make a decision based on that as well.
That's right. Yeah, we're not talking about the bridges now anyway. We're talking about what they are going to do at that intersection within the next few months. And so as far as the bridge is concerned, we need to cross that bridge when we come to it.
That's right.
I do think that one of the things that we should be mindful of, and it's not going to cost them any money, is the pedestrian traffic. And from what the library people have said, especially now that Pomfret Road is closed for the short term, the pedestrian issue is an issue going back and forth to the library, and I suspect it is probably an issue for artistry, getting their kids, and probably they're done with their summer camps anyway, getting across the road to the Grange Theater. And we have no Grange Theater this summer, but that will come back at some point in the future. And I think we should, especially if that lower bridge is going to be functional for another 10 or 15 or 20 years, which hopefully it might be, that we might want to discuss some way for pedestrians to, because the Grange Theater relies on the Tego store parking,
which I know where you're going with this. And when we were down there with Chris and Scott, they also did mention that it wouldn't be a bad idea to investigate getting a footbridge put in down there on that side of the road. So,
well, and that's it. Thank you for knowing where I was going. And it might be something that we could talk to Tego about. And maybe it's nothing that they're going to be interested in Tego store isn't artistry, but there is the safety of pedestrians is a concern of mine. And I don't think it's going to cost them any money much to do some pedestrian crosswalks and some signage and getting V-Trans on board to sign out these pedestrian crosswalks. And we may want to suggest perhaps that a footbridge like what Chris Bump and Scott Jensen suggested might alleviate. I get real concerned, especially after dark with no street lighting, when you see people walking down the middle of the road. I think that is not acceptable, and maybe that has nothing to do with the Tego store. I would like to give them everything that they want, as long as it doesn't infringe upon what we're trying to get accomplished there, which is getting people out of Pomfret Road safely and getting them onto stage rows safely and not having people get run over in the middle of the road.
I would love to.
It's not a Tego store issue at this point.
Right, right. So, Chuck, would you want to talk to Nate and tell him what we're looking for and get a day set up so we can go down and do that in the near future?
I will do that.
And then that way we won't, at the next meeting or before, if we need to do a special meeting, we could make a decision.
We should make sure that Jimmy is there as well.
Yeah.
Coordinate some kind of meeting with Jimmy as well. And I will, whenever you can get them to coordinate that and get a temporary fence up of some sort, we'll get down there.
Okay. We need all of us to be there so that we all know exactly what we're talking about.
Yep.
Yep.
The one thing that was mentioned before, and that kind of changed, is in our visit, they were talking a split rail fence, and now they're talking a picket fence. So not that a fence is a fence, but visibility is going to be different with the two.
I mean, they must have enough scrap down there. I would, to make the most, seeing though we're in the planning stages, make the most obtrusive fence that they would possibly put down there, which would be a solid fence. So whatever height they're proposing, make the thing out of plywood. And then you don't have to go, well, I can kind of see through the pickets or the split rail. And then if it's solid, we can go from there and go, hey, look, I can see over this in a regular car, not a problem. Or it's back far enough to where the stop line's going to be, not a problem. Or you go, no, that's in the way. How about if if it was XYZ fence, then you could see through it or whatever. And then, because if they set up something out of plywood and you go, yeah, that's not an issue, then you can pretty much let them put up whatever kind of fence they want as long as it's in that footprint of that mock fence.
Sure.
Well, I think all these suggestions are great, and I think we should get them to do that, and we should get down there, and then we should make a decision for them. I think this has gone on long enough, and we need to move this along for them so they know what they're doing. And then if we give them permission to do something and they change it, they're going to have to come back, but that's going to be on them, not us.
Oh, absolutely.
And so Chuck's going to handle that coordination. And now we need to discuss the road closure, which I would prefer not to make a decision on until Jimmy has some input. He came up with that October 15 date, and
my guess is from progress down there, they're asking for more time, and they're not going to make that.
Yeah, I guess you weren't here when I asked that to be added to the agenda. I was talking with Nate this morning. They have torn down the entire old post office section of the building because of the foundation issues and that sort of thing. And so Nate asked me if I could talk with the board about possibly extending the road closure. And I said, I'll talk with the board about it and I'll ask that to go on the agenda tonight, but I certainly wouldn't expect a decision. And they had asked it for November 15th originally, and Jimmy said, no, October 15th. And I said, I think that Jim is the one who is going to be the one whose opinion carries the most weight on this. So we do need to wait for Jim.
What were they asking for an extension?
They didn't ask for a specific date.
Yeah. I think
if we would consider extending. So,
I mean, when we made that decision, I believe I'm the one that said it. Jimmy agreed with me or said it basically at the same time, was basically it needed to be done and open by time snow flew so that road clearing could take place.
Exactly.
So we set it October 15th, which is a fairly safe date. And in my mind, it's kind of set it early so when they end up needing more time that there is a little bit of leeway so it's not being a pain in the ass to everybody. Where you said it, November 15th, and they're thinking, oh, well, we got to get done, and then stuff happens, and then it gets pushed back to December 15th. So Yes, no, I don't want to make a decision. Yes, Jimmy needs to weigh in on it. You know, if it is November 15th, I think, you know, experience, you know, although only 1 year, but, and every winner's different. You know, I would think November 15th would be doable. And my thought would be that, you know, if for one reason or another, there's a snowstorm and they are still set up and working on it, that their contractor or whoever their plow maintenance person is going to have to be responsible for clearing that so that pickets and the fire department could get out as though it was being taken care of as a town road. If we got to that point, because it is a town road.
Yeah. And he did say to me that is now their primary focus. They've got to get that done as quickly as they can. So
yeah,
that's where they'll be focusing. So, yeah.
And ultimately, one way or the other, we're going to have to work together to.
Well, I don't think they're quite at the point where they're going to do this outside work on the front anyway. At this point, they're working on the building. But we do need to get them an answer as to what they're going to be able to do and then just move on to other things. That's my feeling anyway. Yep. So Chuck's going to set something up and we'll all hit down there if we can. So the next item on the agenda, which I put on here, is COLA and the salaried and stipend employees. And the reason I put this on was that Ellen called after I gave her the information as to what we had decided at the last meeting regarding Jimmy's salary, Jimmy's hourly wage, and the COLA increase for all hourly employees, which is what we said on the thing. And so that answered her question regarding Sawyer, Key Sawyer. He was an hourly employee, so he should get the COLA increase as well, which is what I told her, and I felt that that was the case. That was what the motion read. However, we did do nothing for COLA and our salaried employees, which are Ellen and Becky. And then, although I realize we can do nothing with the stipend employees, which is basically, excuse me, our tax delinquent tax collector, I think we should probably do something regarding that at some kind of motion at town meeting or change the way the tax collector gets paid. But the bottom line right now is we gave COLA increases to all our hourly employees, but we did nothing for our two employees that are on a salary.
I would think it would apply equally to anybody that's, or should apply to anybody that's on salary and or an hourly employee. I mean, they are employees, you know, stipend employees are a little bit different. I mean, we're all stipend employees of the town. So,
well, I didn't expect a COLA increase for myself, anyway, so make a motion to
no stipend
that
employee
effect,
is
and then we can
for.
Get a second and then we can discuss it if you would like to.
Make a motion that all employees of the town of Pomfret, hourly and
well, we've already done the hourly employees, so just do the salaried employees.
All right, so I make a motion that salary employees also would be eligible for a COLA increase on an annual basis.
Retroactive to the 1st of July?
Yes.
Yes.
Is there a second to that motion?
I'll second it.
Is there discussion on that motion?
Just a question. So we're only talking salary, not no stipend.
I don't think we can do the stipend employees without changing the way they are. I don't think that it's within, because the stipend was set up by the townspeople, I don't think we can change that without.
I guess the question would be who legally controls what a stipend employee gets, regardless of who set it up. I think that would probably must be set somewhere in statute, wouldn't it be?
Yeah, so that would be a question for VLCT to answer, whether the select board can, in addition to stipends set by the voters, I don't know that it's a slam dunk. I think it may be an open question whether.
Well, I can certainly query them on that in that regard, and we can get an answer before the next meeting.
Yep.
The other thing on not that I am opposed to salaried, but I guess, you know, people can have different opinions on it, but I think one of the lingering issues is that Becky and Ellen are not technically subject to our personnel policies because they are separately elected officials. And we have to be careful because while they are salaried, they are also separately elected. And that may not really be a huge factor in this, but the part that is a big deal is that they're not technically subject to our personnel policies. And if I feel that if they are going to get the benefits of some of these personnel decisions we're going to make, there may be some give and take here that if they're going to reap some of the benefits of our personnel decisions, they might need to allow themselves to be subject to some of our policies as well. Because right now what we have is a situation where Ellen and Becky can basically say, we want the benefits, we want the COLA increases, but we don't want to be subject to the personnel policies. And I don't think that's fair either. I think what's fair.
None of our elected officials, the listeners are not our quote employees either. They're elected officials. Some of the auditors.
Yeah.
So they're all in the same boat. The reason I put this on there was there were two salaried employees that we did not give a COLA increase to. We gave it to all of our hourly employees. We gave it to our hourly elected officials, but we did not give it to our two salaried employees. I want, and that was not in the motion. I don't have any skin in this game. I put this on here because we gave a COLA increase to every other person that is drawing an amount of money out of this town for services that they provide. If you don't want to give them a COLA increase because they're salaried and or elected officials, that's fine. But then we're not treating them just because they're on a salary versus an hourly pay. We're not treating them the way we're treating every other individual that we are asking to provide services for us.
But
this is a board decision. I don't have any skin in the game, but we're not treating those two employees the same as we're treating, or we have now treated everyone else.
Right. I guess I would just make the point, and I understand the argument, but they are not the same, not in the eyes of the law. Under employment law, salaried employees are treated differently in not just in these COLA situation, but in a range of things that salaried employees are not, they don't get some of the same things that hourly employees get. And so everybody should understand that there's the unfairness, the apparent unfairness. And I'm not necessarily opposed to giving Becky and Ellen the COLA increase, but I think it's important for everybody to understand that there is a very clear difference between salaried employees and hourly employees on a range of issues, not just COLA. you know, there are a lot of differences in how salaried employees are treated from hourly employees. And I guess what I would throw out there to the board, and again, I'm not opposed to the COLA increase. I just think we need to be careful in looking at our whole situation. And this is where one of our other agenda items can be handy in engaging Teresa, is getting her advice on some of these things. I've seen it where some organizations don't offer COLA increases to salaried employees at all because they are salaried. You basically negotiate your salary versus hourly employees that have a different set of benefits. So I think we just need to be careful before we do it. But again, I'm not opposed to it. The board could very easily just say, you know what, everybody gets the COLA increase. But again, we should be thinking clearly that there are very, very distinct legal differences between salaried and hourly employees.
Any other discussion?
So it sounds like we should probably be getting some advice from VLCT in this situation.
I think the advice from VLCT we need to get is, does the select board have latitude to give cost of living increases over and above any stipend set by the voters? That's one question. Yeah. I think it's clearly within the board's purview, as far as I know, to give salaried employees cost of living adjustments. I think, again, the point I'm making is we probably need to look a little bit more. You know, we just need to think about how we want to treat salaried employees versus hourly, whether we want to kind of treat them the same or differently. But there are differences. Anybody who's worked in a company that has salaried versus hourly employees will know that there are pretty big differences between the two.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, yeah, I guess having worked in both positions, at least with my employers, and adjustments and increases, wouldn't say that I've noticed a difference there, although differences in other ish areas given the state of the world currently, but I can't get into that. I think it's the right and the decent thing to do is to at least give those two employees a cost of living increase, because my opinion on not giving whatever the cost of living increase adjusted for your area is that you are essentially, potentially, it's a pay cut. As the cost of stuff goes up, you know, you're making less money. I think, and you know, I mean, you can come up with reasons why that's not necessarily just what you should do, but given right. We've done that for other employees and who we are and as a town,
I agree, but I just want to point out, I'd have to go back and look at the budget, but I think,
there is an increase in the budget.
Yeah,
we just voted to give an employee in the town essentially a $4 an hour increase. Although I was in favor of it, again, it was for personal beliefs that, yes, said employee did deserve it. But in my opinion, that was also on a whim. So there was no solid basis for doing the increase that we did in all reality, other than it felt right.
John, what are you referring to?
I mean, we, I, I don't think it's a I hate sharing names in public forums, so I'm not going to get into that. But we gave an employee a $4 an hour raise, which I believe was deserved, but and it was in everybody's mind. But in essence, just doing it because you think you believe it, how is that different than this? So, you know, where does one draw the line? So, you know, to me, giving them everybody a cost of living increase, regardless of their an hourly employee or a salaried employee, is the minimum that we should be doing. And I can't come up with any good reason that you wouldn't. So,
right. The I guess, so Ellen, again, I'd have to go back and look at the numbers, but I'm pretty sure Ellen got a pay raise this last fiscal year, the one that started in July. Because
both Ellen and Becky went from $24,000 to $25,000.
Right. So I guess my point is that through the budgeting process, Ellen and Becky sort of have the power today to give themselves pay raises.
Well, I mean, that was going to be my next point, is who is the one that's supposed to be.
They cannot give themselves a raise. They proposed that in their budget. We gave them the raise. We approved that budget item. We approved that salary increase.
Right.
At least I knew it was there. They proposed that. They both had been working for the town for a number of years, doing their jobs, and they probably deserved that increase. I felt that they did. And so we gave them that increase as of the 1st of July. All I was trying to do by putting this COLA on is, you have said many times in the past, we should treat all hourly employees fairly. We also should treat non-hourly employees fairly as well, in my view. That being said, this is a board decision. This is not my decision. If we don't wish to do it at this time, if we wish to get more advice, that's well and good too. But I think that John's point is well taken. If you don't give an employee at least a cost of living increase, you basically are reducing their earned income, because it's going to go not as far. So there's the bottom line. But there was a $1,000 increase for each of them in the budget. How that would work out to the number of hours that they put in, I cannot say, because I did not do the math. But yeah, I certainly can.
Yeah, I guess my point, I am all in favor of being fair. So let me just say that. I think whatever we do, we should be fair and equitable. But as one of my mentors taught me many years ago, fair does not necessarily mean equal. And so what you do for one person may not necessarily be the same as what you do for others, yet it may still be fair. And I am wondering if because Ellen and Becky are compensated through essentially a different process than by changing hourly wages, effectively they're, and I agree with you, Emily, what they didn't give themselves raises per se. The board did approve that through the budget process, but they effectively get pay increases through the budgeting process. To me, that's where the equity lies. That's how we have a process already to give our salaried employees the whatever the appropriate raises are through the budgeting process. So I'm not sure it really fits in the same paradigm as hourly employees for the COLA increase.
I would agree with that to a point. I think the point of putting them in with the COLA with everybody else is that if you make it a policy, although any future board can reject any policy that we create today and change said policy, it does leave one hurdle in the way of that and cements a little more permanently something into the system instead of it just being kind of left open to the budgeting process on a yearly basis.
Well, then I guess when it comes to the budgeting process, we would need, and there is a salary increase, we would need to, we didn't hit, last year, we didn't really make any inquiry about what the basis was for the salary increase. Was it cost of living? Was it something else? Was it just because they're doing a great job? But I think if we're going to have salaried employees be a part of the COLA increase, I think we need to be more diligent in any time there's an increase in the salary through the budgeting process, understanding what the composition is of that increase. But, this is exactly the kind of stuff Teresa can help us navigate.
I think for me that the reason to have we ought to have a COLA increase in our pay policy, which my thoughts would apply to said salary people, so that we don't have to have this discussion every year, and then just one would have to be cognizant of it during budgeting time, so that you can budget appropriately for those raises across the board on a given year, but so that we don't have to have this discussion on a yearly basis, that, July 1 comes along every year. You have it in the policy that these people get a COLA increase on July 1 based on whatever that adjusted rate for your area is on that year. And it is just something that automatically happens for all your employees. And then you discuss that review period time. If there's going to be any merit-based raises for those same people. Now, again, you get into fuzzy situations, and as we all know, with our elected officials and how that's going to happen, but I would think that we could at least have them into the policy, into our COLA policy. But that's my opinion, so... They're still providing a function for our town. So, why would they be not subject to get that like everybody else?
Well, I think they would not be subject to it, arguably, for the same reasons we're talking about, is what is the process through which salaried employees get increases in pay? Is it through the budgeting process? Is it through a combination of automatic COLA increases and the budgeting process? I mean, these are, this is where there is a big difference between hourly and salary. And we just have to decide how we're, I think your point is well taken, John, that we want to make as much of this automatic as possible and not have to think about it every year. But we do, I think, initially have to grapple with some of these questions and make sure we've got an answer. And I think the key difference here is that unlike hourly employees, we do have a method through the budgeting process to make changes to pay for salaried employees.
I don't know where other people are at, but I'm ready to move on. I think we have but it's been seconded, has it not?
Yeah.
It has been seconded.
I think it's time to move.
All those in favor of the motion to give our two salaried employees a COLA increase along with all our other employees retroactive to the 1st of July, signify by saying aye. John?
Aye.
Excuse me, Chuck?
Aye.
Steve? Are you there, Steve?
He's muted.
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
And myself, aye. Okay, that takes care of that one.
Before we move off of this topic, can we make sure we bookmark an action item for when we get to budget season that we raise this again so we make sure we're reviewing this as part of the budget process too?
I'm sure we will. I'll remember.
Okay, good.
Budget season isn't very far away.
Right.
Conflict of interest policy. This did not make it into the agenda packet yet again. And I think that the townspeople should have some input in this document if they wish to. And so I would like to put that off until the next meeting, and maybe it can get into the packet.
How come it didn't get into the packet?
Because Cindy asked you for it and you did not submit it.
Cindy, you've had it for a while, right?
Here. I never got the final version. The one that I am able to get to still has the red edit stuff in it.
Okay, I think that must have been I thought Chuck replied and had some. Okay, let's get that cleared up.
Okay.
I didn't realize you didn't have it. I thought Chuck's last reply with his comments were enough to have you with the final version.
I don't know where the edited stuff.
It's on SharePoint.
I know, but I didn't know. It has it been approved? The one I come up with still has the need to approve the edits.
I don't know. I mean, the last comments Chuck made were the last I saw, and I thought it was good to go after that.
Well, I'll check it again.
Okay, moving on. We have the Newstead easement, and this is a letter that was in the packet from Mr. and Mrs. Newstead. The house on Galaxy Hill that Jimmy discussed at the last meeting regarding a change in the cutouts and also a permission to go on their land to maintain the culvert dead box or whatever you call it. Drop box, whatever it's called, and I don't have the correct term. And you saw that letter, and they signed that. The question is, do we want a formal easement document rather than just a permission that would be recorded in the town records so that when they sell their property, that the title search would show that indeed the town had a legal right to go in and maintain that situation so that we have adequate drainage off the road to get into that manhole. And so that's a board decision as to whether that needs to happen or not.
I would think it would be, and I don't know how, you know, detailed legally that easement would need to be, because that would be out of my purview for sure. But I would think we would want something both to protect us as well as protect any future owner of that piece of property so that that's going as well.
Does anyone else have any thoughts on the matter?
Yeah, I think we should do the easement. That way it's in writing, and future landowner, there's no question.
Chuck, Scott?
Yeah, I agree. It should be. We should have an easement. And of course, it'll be filed, you know, in the town clerk's office. So it will be found anytime a title search is done.
Are you in agreement with that, Scott?
Sounds good to me.
Okay, we will work on trying to get that together then. HR consultant.
So, Emily, you saw Teresa's email. She's available. So we should pick up, I think, where we left off with her. There were a number of areas where she could help us. I think I have to go back and look at the minutes, but I think we already voted a while ago to get her assistance on things. Maybe that's the place to start, is just to pick up on that list of things where we asked her to get involved. I think COVID hit, and I don't think we were still in the last fiscal year, so there wasn't money budgeted, but we've got money budgeted this fiscal year. So I think we should just be able to pick up where we left off.
I would like to see what we get in for taxes before we commit to spending any money. And the main reason is that Ellen, when I spoke with Ellen today, she had anticipated a large number of envelopes with tax payments in it. And there was not a large number of envelopes with tax payments in it, the first payment of taxes. She has a $900,000 and some odd dollars bill coming due within a month to pay the school. And so I would like to, if we could, at least I would like to take a look at that list, dig out what that motion was, whenever it was, back in February probably, and look at her report again and dig out a list of what we thought our priorities were. And before we get her involved, that we, as a board, determine what our priorities are, because we may have some money issues, and although the highway budget doesn't have anything to do with the town budget necessarily, we have no indication when we will get that grant for the Howe Hill job, so we're going to have to pay Pike off. That revised bill hasn't come in, but it will come in shortly, I presume. And so I'd like to see what we get in for taxes on this first payment before we go too far in spending money that we don't absolutely have to spend. That's just my opinion.
I guess I don't disagree with it, but we seem to be pretty willing to spend money on other things that weren't in the budget. And yet here's something that is in the budget and we're hesitating to spend money on it. So I guess it feels a little bit hypocritical to say we want to hold back on spending money on things that are in the budget when we're so willing to spend money on things that aren't in the budget.
Inconsistent, maybe, not.
Inconsistent.
Well, that $14,000 that is in the budget is all of our professional services. That's legal fees and everything else. That is not just an HR consultant. That being said, I don't think when we built the budget, we anticipated COVID-19. I don't think for a moment we anticipated that people might not be able to pay their taxes. And I think we have a week. Taxes are due on Friday, and we'll have a better idea of what kind of delinquent tax problems we will have in a week. And maybe we'll have some idea as to when we're going to get grant money back in and things. We've got quite a few commitments out there already, and I don't think it's going to hurt to wait a week to figure out what kind of taxes we get in. If you feel that that isn't the case, that's fine. But as a board, we haven't decided what we want her to work on and where we would like her to spend some time. And quite frankly, if we don't make a decision any better than we have in the past as to what we want her to work on and the decisions we need to make in order for us to help, for her to help us get there, we're wasting our money.
Well,
and we have not made those decisions, as far as I recall. We said, yes, we would engage her again, and these are the things we might have her work on. But if we have to make some decisions as to what we want her to work on before we say, okay, let's just go for it. And we haven't made those decisions. I haven't pulled that report back out that she sent us back in February. And to be honest, I can't recall what indeed that motion said in February. So I don't think we're quite ready to engage her at this particular time. We may be in 2 weeks if we pull that information together and get ourselves organized. But we're not organized right now, are we?
Well, I don't think it's difficult. I think it's easy enough to pull up those minutes.
But have we done that? And are we ready to say, Teresa, these are the things we wish for you to work on?
Well, we the personnel policy was one of them. I know that for sure. A compensation policy was another one.
I think that the organizational thing is key, because I think, you know, it bring up, I mean, Scott does bring up a good point of, and Emily as well. I mean, they're both valid and good points about spending or not spending the money and the whole organizational thing as it relates to money that may or may not come in and taxes and, you know, what's a few hundred dollars for an HR consultant when we just gave somebody a $10,000 raise for the year? So, you can flip the coins both ways and have two different opinions at the same time on the matter. But you do have to stop at some point and figure out what direction you're going in. So,
before we engage her, I would like to make, as a board, and Chuck wasn't even on the board when we discussed these things with Teresa, just what is the most important thing we want for her to work on if we're going to have her work on anything at all, and make that decision as a board and where we want to go with that. There's some decisions in order for us to get the best value out of Teresa. There's some decisions that we have to make. She's not going to make them for us. And we have not made those decisions. And that's all I'm saying is, if we, yes, first of all, if we don't have enough tax money, that's an issue in itself that we will know on Friday. However, if we don't know what we want her to do and what our feeling as a board is, how we feel we want these things to be organized, then it's going to be extremely difficult for her to come up with a product that we will all agree on.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think we need to get
and
out.
I don't think that we are prepared or have done that. I didn't pull out that information that she gave us back in February or January, whenever it was. I did not pull out the motion that we might have made, but I do think that those things are important to do, and I think we should sit down and have them with our packet at the next meeting, for the next meeting, and then we can have an intelligent discussion, which I don't feel we can have today, because I don't know what, I don't recall what everything was in that document.
Yeah.
I can pull it together for the next agenda.
Yeah, I think we can all have that, have it in front of us.
And yeah, I have it in front of me right now. So we did, just so everybody understands, we did approve a contract with Teresa, and it was basically a pay-as-you-go contract. So we do have an active contract with Teresa already. And so the items that we agreed at the time, and we can certainly revisit this, that she would help us out on, one was the compensation analysis. The other was the employee handbook. Also, aka the personnel policy, and then a performance review package, which included helping us develop basically performance improvement plans, our basically the whole structure around our performance appraisals. And then we contracted with her to help us develop a combined time off policy. So those were the priorities back in the time that we, again, already agreed that she would help us out on. So we went through this process, albeit it was before Chuck joined the board, But we did go through the process of identifying the priorities we wanted her help on. And we did program money into the budget for this work. And I do think that, I guess I feel a little bit like we're throwing up roadblocks, especially since we just gave a pretty significant pay raises to people, and we're kind of throwing up roadblocks to have what I think is pretty important HR support. But, you know, we can certainly look at the money situation, but I guess I would have expected us to say the same thing when we were spending money on pay raises. We should have waited to see what we get for tax revenue, but we didn't.
Well, that's a little bit different. We're talking about our employees as opposed to, you know, an outside consultant.
Well, is it? Because we're still talking about whether we've got the money or not. I mean, I don't disagree that what we did is the right thing to do to take care of employees, but if you don't have the money, you don't have the money.
If you don't pay your employees, they won't stay. And that's the bottom line. If you're not competitive and you've got a good employee and you want them to stay, you either have to get competitive if you expect them to stay for you and work for you and do an excellent job for you, you have to pay them accordingly, regardless of whether you have money enough or not for an HR consultant or a lawyer or whatever. If you expect your good employees, and we have some good employees now, if you expect them to stay, you have to pay them adequately on the job or they will not be there. And then we will be back to square one looking for new employees. That is a little bit different than going out and paying a consultant to do things that, yes, they probably should be done, and yes, we should work on them. Are they absolutely critical, and do we depend upon them day in and day out, 5 days a week, 40 hours a week, weekends, week nights, holidays, to plow our snow, to fix our roads when a storm comes? No, we do not. There is a difference there.
I guess I would disagree, because we have talked about this many times, that combined time off policies, for example, are critical to retaining good employees. So having someone like Teresa's assistance in developing a combined time off policy is just as critical as retaining key employees with adequate pay, is having an adequate pay policy, I mean, a time off policy. So having Teresa's assistance on helping us develop the policies and practices that will help us retain good employees, I don't see that as any less critical as paying people a fair wage.
From a philosophical standpoint, I completely agree with you, Scott, from the business aspect of things and my work. But I think at this point, we've potentially do have a money issue, and although what we'd be paying her would be small peanuts on what we're paying other things. But I think we will know, and by the time we have our next meeting, is where we do stand financially. We may be totally fine. We may be way worse off than we're even expecting at the moment. So it's probably something we should have considered when we gave raises at our last meeting and waited to see how things were going to shake out. We didn't, and that was then, this is now. And while I do agree that it is as important to having good HR policies and having an HR person to help us with that, because we obviously are not getting it done on our own, I do think we ought to just wait the 2 weeks and come back with that sheet of what her suggestions are, which were her priorities in order from what I remember correctly. And then make sure that we all agree on what order we want to tackle them in, and then come up with a game plan, then I don't think at this point waiting two more weeks is going to hurt anything. So
no, that's fine. I don't mind waiting 2 weeks either, but I think I just want to make sure, and I think you're agreeing with me, John, that that this work is also important.
It is, and in some ways, from personal experience, it's as or more important in some aspects than what you're making on an hourly basis. In all reality,
mark that line again, and
so can we move on from this one and get some information for the next meeting, and pull out those files and that report, and then Chuck can have a copy of that to see what Teresa proposed back in January/February, and what that motion was at that particular time.
Yeah, I'm forwarding the contract that we signed with her.
Can you also forward the report that she gave us?
Yeah, that's further back, but the report, the contract is the culmination of the report.
Well, I understand that, but it, really Chuck should have the advantage of reading her entire report.
That's fine. I'm just offering context. I'm not saying I'm not going to send it.
Okay. We now have the request from the Chase family to borrow the metal chairs and the tables from the town hall for their gathering for, I believe, next weekend. Is that correct, Cindy? Next Saturday, to use for a celebration at their house. This is for Lyle's death. Ellen said she got this request today. I did not feel it was a decision for me to make alone, and so the board as a whole has to make it.
Yeah, I mean, this brings to me the whole COVID situation up, and
I understand that as well.
We need to make the decision based on not who and why they're requesting it, but as to whether we want to lend this stuff out currently, I guess. And then it's going to be the how often, you know, somebody wants it the next weekend. Are we going to decide that's, you know, time enough for it to sit for potential disease spread?
Well, you bring up a valid concern for the COVID thing. And quite frankly, I have not reread those regulations for a couple of weeks. I don't know what kind, technically, if we were going to rent those items out, all of those that we used last Tuesday to count votes should have been, I felt they were going to sit in there till probably November when we counted votes again. All of those should have been carefully cleaned and sanitized before we put them back in the ante room, the hall room there, after we used them to count votes last week. We did not do that. And we did not do that because we didn't feel they were going to be used again.
I think, you know, it would be easy enough to say, you know, we're not renting out the town hall, which includes town hall equipment, and leave it at that. Or we could decide that, no, we will indeed loan stuff out to people or residents of Pomfret. Or, yeah, I hate to tell people no, especially for a situation like that. But I don't know.
Well, this is a board decision, and so any input that everyone has is fine. And you know, there is the COVID-19 thing and the concern and the non-sanitized. And technically, if they were going to bring them back, they should all be cleaned and sanitized when they get returned before they get put back into the facility. Again, this is I will entertain any motion and or more discussion so that we come up with an acceptable decision that we're all comfortable with.
Other people's thoughts.
It's a tough one.
Yep.
No, I hate the idea of saying no. God, it
right.
just doesn't. And I just wonder, you know, maybe the tables, the wooden tables, and the metal chairs we're talking about. Yes.
Well, I don't think they're wooden tables, are they? Those are those laminate tables, weren't they, that we got out the other night?
Are those the ones they want? Yeah.
It's the metal folding chairs and like the banquet tables.
If you believe all the things you read from the CDC, I mean, you know, what, 95% of COVID dies in 7 minutes of direct sunlight. So, I mean, you know, you want to go on safety aspect, you're probably pretty safe with if it's sat out in the sun somewhere for a half an hour, that the chance of something passing on is probably pretty slim. I mean, it's definitely different than renting out an entire building that's difficult to clean, but
yeah, that's what I'm thinking, that you know, if they're going to be sitting outside in the bright sunlight, probably it wouldn't be a problem. I don't know.
Well, I suppose you could make, you know, so when are they requesting them for? What's the dates again?
Next week.
Next Saturday.
This coming Saturday?
Not this weekend, but the following weekend. I believe. We can give them permission to use the chairs and tables under the condition that they must wash and sanitize them before replacing them back in the town hall. And that's just going to be it is not going to be something that I'm going to go up and check on, but all they'll have to do is get some sanitizing wipes and some gloves and just sanitize them and stack them back in there.
I'd be fine with that. We ought to just, you know, acknowledge as a board that, you know, I wouldn't want to rent that equipment out more than, you know, every, you know, on a more than a 14-day, I guess, rotating.
Well, we're not even in the equipment rental business.
No, we're not renting it. No,
this isn't our business. This isn't what we normally would do. Lyle and Elaine Chase have both been in town. Lyle made it to 100 years old, and we're providing a consideration for a long-term local resident who is trying to celebrate or have a remembrance of one of their loved ones. And we're not in the rental business. And if they are asking if they can borrow these tables and chairs, our concern, to my mind, is the COVID thing and right. the sanitization of those things before they get put back in the hall, so that if we have to come and use them to count votes in November, which probably we will, that they will, and we can get them out and sanitize them again, and when we use them again. But that is my concern, is that we do not lay ourselves open or some other town function that has to happen in the town hall to some kind of risk in that regard.
Right. And we know that
the virus lasts longer on metal surfaces, hard surfaces.
That is right.
If we were to stipulate that we will allow them to be borrowed, but that we will not allow them to be borrowed or rented for a period of 2 weeks after that, and if also we required them to sanitize them before they put them back, it certainly seems to me that it's safe enough.
Yeah, I would agree.
So I need a motion to that effect.
I just want to make sure. So this is just so you know, you're renting or lending these out to a bunch of old people, most likely. You should be sure that if somebody gets sick, that you're not going to be held as a town responsible, like lawsuit-wise for this. Because if it's a 100-year-old person that just died, most of those people that are going to be celebrating are probably over 50. So not that I'm suggesting that the tables and chairs are dirty now, but that's just a thought. I had my hand raised, but no one called on me. So I just wanted to throw that out there.
I suppose that is a consideration. We have not sanitized those things. And I don't know. They were still using the tables when I left for counting votes. Did they get sanitized before they got put away?
No, they didn't. No.
And so technically they will just have been sitting there for 14 days and they will not have been sanitized at all.
Yeah, well, they're going to be sanitized just by virtue of the fact that the virus dies well within a period of 14 days. But, lawyers, lawsuits, insurance, all this stuff, it just makes you want to throw up your hands. And
well, it does. And quite frankly, it would be very difficult to prove that one caught the COVID-19 virus from the tables and chairs rather than some other individual using the tables and chairs.
Well, that's certainly more likely to catch it that way.
That being said, the lady that I spoke with, whose name I cannot remember at the moment, at VLCT, the passive insurance lady said, if you aren't making any money at it, don't do it.
Yeah, well,
and that was in relation to renting out the town hall, and so I think we should put that in the mix as well. And I think, given the fact that both Lyle and Elaine have lived here so long, it makes it a very difficult decision.
It does, and I would just throw that argument right out anyway. If you're not making any money at it, don't do it, because that just doesn't work here in Pomfret. I'm sorry. And not renting out the town hall was an entirely different situation, where we were going to have a crowd of 50 people or whatever in that very small space. That's an entirely different situation. However, you know, I was on the verge of making the motion to go ahead and do it, but Kathy jumped in, and now I'm, you know, geez, this is tough.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to do that, but I'm immune compromised, so I think about these things, and I just wanted to make sure that everyone else was thinking about it too, because although unlikely, it is possible, because it does live, they have proven for quite some time, mind you, maybe not contagious, but lives for a long time on hard surfaces, up to something like 62 days in some of these ships where they had it in the beginning that came in California. So long time.
I had heard that, and I thought that was urban legend, 62 days.
Yeah, long time. But like, they can't prove that you can get it from it just because it's living on the surface, but it scares me with old, unwell, or maybe well people, and you just don't want to pass on germs, and being that it's just at the 14 days, and 14 days is just a number they pulled out of the sky, it doesn't actually mean anything. I just worry about old people and furniture, and mind you, they're going to probably end up renting it from somewhere like a hardware store if they don't get it from you, so it's just as bad, so it's all just many things to think about.
Well, we could require them not to allow any old people to the party, I guess.
I think that would be worse.
Oh, okay.
We can go put the tables outside at 8 a.m. and let them sit in the sunlight all day. I don't know. Yeah, I mean, UV light has proven to be quite effective against it, but, you know.
Right. Was it, does it reflect up under onto the under?
I mean, yeah, right. I don't know how, I'm no scientist, so I don't know how UV light works. I know they say on a cloudy day, it's, you know, 8 minutes as effective on, as 6 minutes on a sunny day. So, I mean, you know, there's no guarantees with anything. So,
no, right.
Yeah. It's all in, listening to the experts and how comfortable you feel is really all you can do.
Maybe they could just sign a waiver that says that they don't hold you responsible and they're aware of the risks, and then everyone's happy and they can still borrow the chairs and you don't feel bad and works for everyone.
Those things don't hold up in court as often as not, do they, Scott?
What doesn't hold up in court?
Waivers, you know, I won't hold you responsible. If
I'm not really sure whether they do or not. I don't have any experience with that. I will say on the liability issue, like a lot of things, what I'm hearing out there is it's what's called a gross negligence standard. So, and basically a gross negligence standard in our world is sort of, you really should have known better. But you didn't.
I don't think we have that here.
Yeah.
Well, I need some kind of motion, and then we need to make some kind of decision.
How many tables and chairs are they looking for?
All I have on the request is that they wanted to borrow tables and metal chairs from the town hall next Saturday to use for a celebration. I do know for a fact, after counting votes last week, that the metal chairs that they want to use are going to be more challenging to get out. They will have to move most of the wooden chairs to get the metal chairs out easily. The tables were fairly close to the edge, so that shouldn't be as much of a problem. But unfortunately, the metal chairs got put in from town meeting before the wooden chairs. And so that will be challenging for them to get out the metal chairs only. But it certainly is doable. I mean, there's a lot of chases and a lot of young people, and in addition to some older ones. So I'm sure that they can manage that fairly well. You could also say to them, yeah, they haven't been sanitized. You should pick them up on a Friday and then leave them out in the sunlight until you wanted to use them on Saturday. But we have no control over what happens to them as far as whether they sanitize things or they don't. And I don't know what the risk is, but I'm game to listen to a motion, and then we'll vote on it.
I don't think we want the whole Chase family up there collecting them. That just adds to the complication. But I don't know. I guess if I don't think we have a gross negligent issue here. So I would just, I guess, let them use it. I don't know. For lack of
wouldn't we say you just have to wipe them down after you're done?
Yes. Yes.
They should sanitize them before they put them back in the ante room of the town hall. For sure, they should sanitize them once they return, before they return them. That would be essential, for sure. Feel that there's a risk, they should sanitize them before they use them, because we have not.
Right. So I guess that's kind of where I was going with my next question. Is there any reason we should believe that there still could be active virus if it were there at all? If there could be active virus, because if there were, that would put the onus on us to have to clean them before they go out. But we can certainly require that they come back sanitized.
I personally do not feel comfortable saying whether or not there is a risk as to any virus there or not. I am not an expert in this field. We use them in the evening. We put them back the very evening. We did not sanitize them. Although Becky did wipe off the tables, we did not sanitize them after we used them. I don't know that anyone that was counting votes has turned up sick, but I wouldn't know myself anyway. That kind of data, unless it goes through the grapevine, is not public knowledge. And so the question then becomes, we have not sanitized them. We cannot guarantee that they do not have virus on them, if indeed anyone that used them to count the votes was symptomless and could have had COVID-19. And so technically, if we wish to even lend them, we've got to either say you have got to sanitize them before you use them and then sanitize them when you return them, or then we have got to sanitize them. Technically, we should do that.
Unfortunately, it sounds like a lot of work on both ways, and maybe more effort than it potentially could be worth. It might be just easier to go and rent them from a rental company. I know it's a little bit of money, but it might be the simplest thing to do, considering the times. And you're going to have people in the building and unknown how many people. I'm sure they're all healthy, but science says people have it and don't even know it. They're carriers, and that's exposing the building to more possibilities. And just my opinion.
Do you want to make that a motion, Steve?
Sure.
There is no good answer here. And
yeah,
I am willing to admit that. There is no good answer here. I would like very much to help the family out. Lyle was a very good friend of mine. But there is no good answer here.
Right.
But we do need to make a decision. And it may not be a good decision, or it may not be a popular decision, but we need to make a decision. So I need a motion on the floor.
So I'll make the motion at this time, considering the COVID-19 and the risks that are involved for the town and the parties looking to borrow the chairs and tables, that we don't do it at this time.
Is there a second to that motion?
Yeah, I'll second it, and then we can decided how we want to vote.
Do you want to discuss it some more, or do you want to vote?
I don't know. So we're just going to talk around in circles here. I don't want to vote, but I have to. So, like Steve said, there's no good decision.
There's no good solution. I realize that. So we're going to move the question. John, aye or no?
Aye.
Chuck?
And the motion was to not
allow the use of the chairs. So a positive vote means you are not allowing them to borrow the chairs and tables.
It's tough.
Yeah, it's really tough.
The way I look at it is you've really got to take, as much as you don't want to, you've got to take who it's for out of the equation, because you really have got to look at it objectively, no matter who it is that's, you know, coming to ask for it. And so if you're going to do it for them because of who they are, you have to do it for at least potentially any Pomfret resident, regardless if they've lived here a week or, you know, their entire lives in essence. So otherwise it's not fair.
Right.
Okay, well, then with apologies to the Chase family, I'm going to say aye.
Steve?
I'm gonna follow with Chuck. I'm gonna say aye to the chase. Sorry to the chases, but I gotta vote aye.
Scott.
Aye.
And myself, unfortunately, with grave apologies to the Chase family, that we have this situation of COVID-19, but I have to also vote aye. Okay, moving on. I had a request from Amos Estee from the Energy Committee. We appointed him along with Ann Bauer and Heidi Gennaro and then Frey Arneo to the Energy Committee, and he was wondering if there was any charge from the Select Board, and if so, what they should be working on. And I wrote him back that we were having a meeting tonight, and no, there was no charge, and I would give him the names of the other people on the committee. And so I don't have a charge at this moment in my mind, but I think if we're going to have this energy committee and we're going to expect them to do something for us, we might want to be thinking about that and perhaps put that on the agenda for the next meeting as to what we expected that they would do for the town.
I would love to see it on the agenda, and a topic that I would love to see them take up is the viability and cost of solar for our town buildings.
Yeah, so I would recommend, and I'm not sure we necessarily need a vote on this, but maybe we do, is I would encourage the Energy Committee to draft their own charge. And if we, as the Select Board, have specific things that we would like them to include in the charge, just as John's talking about, I think that would be great. But there's lots before the meeting, or as this meeting started, I found a bunch of examples from different Vermont towns. And they could, if they wanted to take the initiative, they could draft up their own charge and present it to us at the next meeting. And then we could tweak it if we need to, or alternatively, we could draft it for them and go that route. But either way, I tend to favor the idea of them drafting their own, just as a sense of ownership over the committee, an investment in the committee, that maybe they take the initiative to draft up their own charge.
Well, I will return his email then and suggest that, and give him the names of the other people that we appointed, and he can take it from there, and we will let it go at that. I also have a under correspondence. I have a letter here from. Just got to go down here. This is from Kimberly Gilbert, and this is Two Rivers Regional Office is offering free assistance to units of local government to identify and document eligible COVID-19 expenses under the Local Government Expense Reimbursement Grant. There is an attached notice for training and information session regarding the grant. This grant session is Thursday, August 20 at 4 p.m. via Zoom. Grant applications are due September 4th. I'm not aware that we have any documentable COVID-19 expenses. That being said, I don't know what kind of expenses Kevin incurred when at the beginning of the thing when COVID pandemic that he may have incurred as emergency management coordinator. What does the board wish to do about this?
I can't imagine.
I know Kevin is on vacation, so he's not going to be of any use. We could have Cindy figure out, participate in this and see what it offers. As eligible expenses include, but are not limited to, hazard pay, supplies and equipment, sanitation, facility alterations, overtime compensation, redirection of staff for first response need. I know that Jimmy may have gotten some supplies and equipment in, as did the central office for sanitation and sanitizer and that kind of thing, cleaning supplies. I don't know whether, those that are following entities are Vermont cities and towns, incorporated villages, fire districts, consolidated water and sewer districts, and solid waste management districts. So I don't know whether I was thinking if Cindy was willing, we could have her attend. It's a free meeting. It does not require any cost associated with it to determine whether we might be able to qualify. I just don't think that our expenses were very significant.
It's tomorrow at 4:00.
Tomorrow at 4:00. I can send you the information, Cindy.
Yeah, send me the information.
Unless Becky and Ellen have incurred some expenses in cleaning and stuff like that, I don't know that we have that many COVID-related expenses.
I don't either.
Well, that was my thought, but this letter only came in yesterday, and there was this meeting tonight, and we can have Cindy participate in this Zoom session, and she can find out the information for us, and we can go from there. Tomorrow's Thursday. I don't want to bother Ellen and or Becky at this point. I don't know what kind of expenses they incurred with sanitizing the books in the office and such. I don't know how much money they have put into that.
I can find out that on Friday after I listen to this thing tomorrow.
Shall we have Cindy at least participate in the Zoom session?
Sounds good.
Sure.
I will send her the information after the meeting. Those are the only correspondence that I have. Review of assignments. I will deal with the energy people.
You're going to check with VLTC about COLA.
And I will check with VLCT about the COLA raise.
I will pull out the HR information for the agenda.
And Steve is going to do the truck bids, and Chuck is going to coordinate something with Matt at Tego Store.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And we will go from there. Anything else? So agenda items for next meeting. Are there any in addition to those that are carryovers from this meeting that we know of right away?
Not at this point.
Nope.
I have nothing.
Then I would entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
And would one of you like to be a second?
Second.
Thank you. All those in favor, John?
Aye.
Scott? Told you, I went out of order, didn't I?
Aye.
Yeah. Sorry about that. Usually I don't, but I just screwed up. I'm sorry. Chuck?
Aye.
Steve?
Aye.
Myself, aye. Thank you very much for your assistance. I will send this to you, Cindy, right away.
Thank you.
Good night.
Have a good night.
Good night.